Hello and happy Women's History Month. I am your host, Elias Torres, and this is the American Dream Podcast. To kick off that month that celebrates the contributions and achievements women have made in the United States, I'm highlighting one of my role models, Frida Kapor Klein. Frida has been a self-proclaimed activist since high school, and she's on a mission to make the tech industry more diverse and inclusive. Frida co-founded Kapor Capital, which is a venture capital firm that invests in seed-stage tech startups that work to close the gaps of access for low-income communities and communities of color. She's also founded Smash, which provides STEM education for low-income high school students of color on university campuses across the country. I want to be Frida when I grow up, and this episode will show you why, so keep listening. Welcome, Frida, to the show, to the American Dream Podcast.
I'm so delighted and honored to be talking with you.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? This is, you know, it's a privilege to have you. This is not a fancy podcast. This is not. This is a podcast where I bring Latinos, Blacks, minorities, immigrants to tell their stories, right? To inspire people of what they can do. I'm bringing you here to, like, inspire me, right? Because you are... You're my role model. I really say it. I really mean it. You're my mentor, right? Of what you're doing. So let's tell people about you, and let's tell us a little bit about who are you, where you started, and where are you going.
Terrific. Well, I'm honored and humbled by what you said. You underrate yourself and how much impact you've had, how important you are as a role model and a mentor and an inspiration. So don't doubt yourself, Elias. So let's see. I've always been an activist. I'm old. So I started in middle school. I used to cut school and go picket for the farm workers, Cesar Chavez's United Farm Workers. I did a lot of work in high school, part of a high school student union. I campaigned for the first Black candidate for mayor in Los Angeles. I joined a women's consciousness raising group in high school. So all of that was, you know, that was the late 60s. So all kinds of movements for civil rights, anti-war, women's rights were just blossoming in that new era. So I have always felt like none of us are free until all of us are free. And so in a different era, in a different geography, the focus might be a different group. But I really believe that is our collective work. To work for in any given moment, whoever is especially the target of bias or any kind of unfair treatment. So that's what's always motivated me. And so I kind of moved from the nonprofit world. My first corporate job was Lotus Development Corporation, the Lotus 123 spreadsheet based in Cambridge. And my job description was to make Lotus the most progressive employer in the U.S. I had never seen that job description before, and sadly, I've never seen it since. And so I think for all of you out there who are starting companies, think about what kind of culture you want to build and what are you doing to operationalize that culture? Are you putting people in place to run it? Are you measuring your own performance and the performance of the company? Are you doing surveys that are anonymous and that protect people, that really find out how much safety people feel, how much inclusion people feel in your own company? So then fast forward, co-founded Kapor Capital with my husband, Mitch Kapor, in 2011. And we brought on other team members, two team members who are now running the fund, Brian Dixon and Ulili Anavakpuri. We're incredibly proud of them.
I love them both. I love them both.
They're great. And so what we started out to do is it was to see, could you build a venture capital firm whose investment criteria were investing only in seed or pre-seed tech startups where the core business created or closed gaps of access, opportunity, or outcome for low-income communities and or communities of color. And so it could be, we were sector agnostic, could be ed tech, could be fintech, could be healthcare, but it had to be gap closing. If we would ask the founders, we would ask ourselves, if this business succeeds, who wins? Does it put some people at an unfair disadvantage and some people at an unfair advantage, whether in education or financial services or health, yeah, or does it close those gaps and create more of a level playing field? So from being an early activist, that I just kept moving closer and closer to what I felt like was the center of power.
Yeah.
And how do we change what companies get funded, what companies grow and scale? And so, excuse me, we put out our first impact report in 2019. Mm-hmm. And with 100% gap closing companies, by 2019, we were top quartile financial returns.
Wow.
So we have the data, we have the experience, we have the portfolio that says, and that was well over.
Wait, how many years? What are the years 2011, again?
2011. That was 2011 through the end of 2017, because we put the report out in 2019. Anything that, you know, anything that was started 2017 or after at that point was too new to know what their outcome would be. Right. So by 2011 to 2017, we covered that time period. Mm-hmm. 100% gap closing companies, top quartile financial returns.
Are you talking about, what is it, MOIC, DPI, distributed,
multiple? IRR and TVPI.
Wow, wow. And
compared to both PitchBook, yeah, and Cambridge Associates, sort of the gold standards.
Got it. And that was fund one.
That was the early part. And Brandon Ulili, now that they run the fund, K4 Capital 3 went out and raised K4 Capital 3, $127 million. They put out another impact report with maintaining those returns.
Wow.
And very importantly, we were at 60% underrepresented founders. They've raised it to about 80%.
Incredible. It's so many questions, right? I think I love the word activist. You're like activist, tech, you know, tech person, then tech capital, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm just trying to create the buckets, right?
Right.
My bucket was food stamps, you know, janitor to then job to then entrepreneur, right? And so like activists is sort of not yet in my, but I feel like there's something to that in my future as I look at you, right? Mm-hmm. And I see someone that I want to emulate. Sometimes activism, tech, and money don't mix, or do they, right? Tell me a little bit about that dynamic, because sometimes I feel like what I'm doing makes me, excludes me from being an activist, right? So I'm trying to, teach me a little bit about how do you manage those two worlds that feel opposite in my mind, right?
Well, it's a great question. And there's a lot of the tech community that is sort of anti-activism. But
right,
if you think about it, tech itself and tech culture is all about disruption. And if you think about disruption and activism go together, mm-hmm, because activism is changing things and tech is changing things. So what right, we're looking at is harnessing tech for social good, harnessing investment for social good. So doing good and doing well simultaneously.
Yeah,
I think sometimes the knee-jerk reaction in tech is they think activism is anti-business or anti-capitalist. And that's certainly, we're venture capitalists. We're not anti-capitalists.
Right.
But we do believe that we want to create a tech ecosystem that is inclusive. And we want to, not just for jobs and for entrepreneurship, but we want the products and services created by tech to be things that close gaps and the things that people need, not nice to haves, need to haves, to make your lives better.
I think that that's wonderfully said, and thank you, because this, what you just said is so reassuring, and so this is a moment where you're forming me to my next 20 years, right? To not see them as mutually exclusive, right? Especially for what's happening right now. You know, I still read Twitter sometimes to my detriment, and and we're seeing a wave of like pre-DEI, DEI, and now it's DI, right? I don't even know how to politically correct say it, right? But what is woke? Was that good? Was that bad? What's happening? And now I feel like racism is just coming out in a way to destroy the little bit of progress that maybe it was an illusion that we were making in reducing the gap, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't help me. Tell me what's happening, Frida, and tell me it's going to be better. What do we do with this swing of the pendulum that I feel is what's happening right now, right? Well,
you're completely accurate. There is a big swing of the pendulum that is going on. And if we look, take a big picture of history, we know it'll swing back, but not on its own. We know we have to fight for it to swing back.
Yeah.
And I do think, look, I think some of this is about marketing and comms and rhetoric and all of that, because when I look at the polls of what most people in this country really think, most people in this country want a level playing field. They don't know what that is exactly. And so if it's framed that DEI is to give some people unfair advantage, people say, no, no, don't want that. If DEI is framed that what we're trying to do is remove the biases and barriers that never should have been there in the first place, we're removing things to create a level playing field, then you get people to sign on. So it's really really about...
It's so simple.
Well, it's really about how we explain what we're doing and why we're doing it.
I don't know, I'm going deep here, and I'm going unhooked. I'm not really a good one with words. I feel like, we can edit anything you don't want here. The thing about it is that as a leader of a company that got to 600 people, 100 million in revenue, as two Latino founders, right? I was pushing for a lot of this removal. I was doing a lot of removal of this barriers and obstacles. Uh-huh. I don't know if we were good at DEI, right? To be honest, right? I think I feel like what I wanted is what you are doing. Like, for example, mm-hmm. I would be in a room and we were interviewing, and if there was no diversity in the pipeline of candidates, I would be upset. And I would say, can you please just try? You know what I mean? Try.
Try a little harder.
Try a little harder. So I would do that. Then when we would be in a room to try to make a decision on who we would hire, mm-hmm. we would have two candidates. I would have a black candidate and I would have maybe a woman or a white male, you know, God forbid I say that, right? And when we were comparing the people, people were like, this person managed 32 people and the black person managed 29. Mm-hmm. This person has more experience, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, this one has worked 10 years and this one worked 6. Mm-hmm. Well, the company that this one managed was slightly smaller than this one. Mm-hmm. And so we were getting down to that. And so I felt to me, and just being honest, right, I don't come after me, right, people. I was just like, that's an example of an obstacle that we have to remove.
Right.
where we were so focused on the level of discrepancy and not trying to level the playing field, right? And say, like, is that really what matters?
I do think, I think what you're pointing to, and I think hiring practices are moving this way, to look at skills and competencies rather than all these proxies and rather than pedigrees. What has the person actually done, and how does that map to what we need done?
Yeah. Right? But one thing that happens a lot is that you see this, and the people that are on Hinge on Twitter, they're like, and I think I say it a lot, is that they're like, we're not hiring based on merit, right? Tell me a little bit about, decode that for me, right? It's like, sometimes it takes a longer time because there's less of us at many different levels in the industry in terms of experience.
Right.
So it is hard. And so in my mind, to me, this is what I've seen, as I've hired plenty of executives at all levels. I'm talking about paying millions of dollars to compensation and stock and salary. And so I've hired everything. And at the end of the day, Frida, I'm not blown away by anybody. And yet people make these preferences and this pedigree and this experience. And I'm like, every time I build a company, I build it from the ground up. And my success comes usually in giving people a shot that nobody ever thought, whether they were white, black, or Latino, didn't matter. Usually the stars are those that are like, I took a shot on and they grew with me. And there's just, it's bringing special talent that has special raw, is their person and their values and their experience that have made me successful, right?
Exactly. And so we talk a lot about that. As I mentioned, we wrote a book, Mitch and I, that came out in March of 2023, called Closing the Equity Gap, Creating Wealth and Fostering Justice in Startup Investing. And one of the things we talk about in Closing the Equity Gap is we have a different approach to talent. And we think that's part of our financial success. And that different approach to talent talks exactly what you've been talking about, Elias. It is, we look at, when we're talking to an entrepreneur who's pitching their company, we ask about their lived experience. What in your background, what in your life gave you a sense that this was a big problem and that gave you the passion to solve it? We talk about distance traveled. We talk about, where did you start off in life and where did you get to on your own steam? Not because of family connections, not because of your trust fund, not because your next door neighbor in your fancy neighborhood gave you an unpaid internship. And by the way, only rich kids can afford to take unpaid internships.
Right.
So there's layers and layers and layers of bias that are built in. And so when we're looking at resumes and we say, well, this one went to this school and that one went to a lesser school, this one was hired at a more prestigious company, we have to unpack that. It's like an onion. We have to peel all the layers back and we have to say, well, how did each person, what is their path? What is each of their distance traveled? Who was born on third base, right? Hit a single, or somebody was walked them home and they think, they get credit for a run. And who was born so far from the ball field that they didn't have a chance to get in the dugout. So we want to look at those things. We want to really strip away unearned advantage, unfair advantage. So when the anti-DEI folks talk about merit, are they talking about privilege? Or are they talking about things we really did and earned all by ourselves?
Wow. I love that. It is, even though it's unfair comparison, if we really peel this onion and we go deeper, we can then try to compare apples to apples and say, what you did. Oh my God, I love that. It's funny because I just posted on LinkedIn last week. I said, I think Bill Gross has a TED talk that says that startups are the greatest form of organizations that can help change the world, something like that, right? Uh-huh. And I believe that because as I work with companies that are larger or just the even nonprofits, right? The humans are not geared for maximum speed and efficiency as they are in a startup, right?
Right.
And so that's the energy I love. And so I was saying, so my post says something like this. Here I am retelling my own post. Imagine how embarrassing this is. But I said, I said, join a startup now. Don't worry about that bonus coming in March. Don't worry about that promotion coming in June. Don't worry about that. You're not going to be a co-founder. Don't worry about life work balance. Don't worry about the salary not going up or maybe going slightly down, blah, blah, blah. Just don't worry about the startup shutting down. I go, by the way, I'm hiring. Novi's hiring, my fifth startup. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is where I go. I don't care about where you work at FANG. Mm-hmm. I don't care what Ivy League school you went, private schools, or how fancy your life might be. I go, I want grit. I want to see your GitHub green. I want you to want this. I want you to be mentally strong. I want you to have a chip on your shoulder. I want people with low ego, blah, blah, blah. And so then people are like,
music to my ears.
Right. And I say that. And then, but then now people come to me and it's like, well, Leos, you're speaking for a position of privilege. Oh. And they're like, you're telling people to not do their bonus and this. And I'm like, all those things I did, all those decisions.
Yep.
I did them when I had nothing. Right. So just because I have privilege now doesn't mean you can't measure.
You earned it.
I've earned it, right? And so right. And so then I was telling that to my kids. My kids were like, well, yeah, of course, Dad, you're doing it from privilege. And I go, bring them on to me. Tell me who's going to do that. I will explain to them what I did. But then my daughter goes, Dad, we can do that, though. It's like, exactly. You are in trouble. And so my daughter goes, I guess now I have to explain how I survive the burden of Latino nepotism, she said.
That's great.
And if they're experiencing something very rare, right?
Yes.
That I do that. And I said to her, your job is to, yeah, it is to overcome that and to show people what you're doing in your work.
Right. How did you take your privilege and go from there?
I love what you're doing that when we can measure people, right? I was talking to a mentor of mine, I think Jared Smith was talking about, you want to hire people that have momentum, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, he goes, if they're working at 7-Eleven and they're the midnight shift, uh-huh, but they got promoted quickly and then they went to the date shift and then they did this, you're looking for those people that have that arc, the angle, right? Uh-huh. And so it doesn't matter where they are. And so I think similar to what you were saying is, can we find the angle, but strip the privilege, right?
Right.
And just yes, measure the angle of your own personal output, right? But I think the thing that I struggle with the startups and the Latinos that I see, right, is just our lack of knowledge and network, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so I see great potential. I see myself in them, which is like, how do we close that gap that we don't look and sound like the 19-year-old kid coming out of Stanford, right, dropping out?
Yep.
And goes to Sand Hill Road and sets the right magical incantations. Yet they don't know anything either. But they're just fancy, right? They know fancy stuff. They know how to behave. They know how to, you know, act.
They know the lingo. They know the culture.
Exactly. Like, how do we close that gap?
Well, so I think you close it from both directions. One is you continue to say, that's an unfair metric. So you continue to close it from the hiring side. That has nothing to do with success. That has nothing to do with one's own talent. That has everything to do with accidents of birth, right? So you want to keep closing right. It from the hiring side. And then on the talent side, you want to do a lot of exposure. So for instance, in our SMASH program, we bring speakers like you in who have a foot in both worlds and who can help people understand, can help first-gen, low-income kids of color understand, here's what you need to learn to be able to survive in that world. Here's how to do a practice interview. Here's what you need to know to pass not just the technical part of the technical interview, but the cultural parts of the technical interview. So right. I think you can attack it from both ends.
Right. I think that that's, I remember I was at En-ROADS, you know, En-ROADS, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did En-ROADS in 1995. I would go every Saturday. I would work at Bank of America, and they would, on Saturday, I would spend the whole day in sessions talking about random things to teach us and to close that gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was funny. Like, it's, I don't know. I'll make the joke. It's like they teach us how to act white or something. Well, but it was like,
yes, exactly. It is, you know, I have big, deep ambivalence about programs that, as you say, teach you how to act white, that teach you to fit in, because we need programs that challenge those assumptions. We as not just teaching kids of color to fit in.
Yeah, it is correct. I'm a very practical individual. I'm a capitalist. I'm a tech entrepreneur, right? I did whatever I needed to do to get to where I am. So I'm not usually like, in my mind, like, you don't need to level the playing field for me. You don't have to bring it down. I'm going to climb it there, whatever it takes, right?
Right.
But it's not fair. It's unfair and to expect everybody to do it.
Yep.
But I do think that... So I'm in the middle, right? You're right. I'm ambivalent too. Should we need that? No. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to do some of it? Go for it, right? Do mm-hmm. I have to code switch? Sure. Mm-hmm. The more successful I become, the less I have to code switch. I'm still code switching nonetheless, but yeah. It doesn't hurt me. You know what I mean? That doesn't, you know, but I see it, but it's just whatever. It's how I live. Uh-huh. Especially in Cape Cod in the summer. the thing is... I was going to ask you, though, but there's another part of it, right? There's the behavioral, there's the code switching, there's the entering into the system. Uh-huh. But what about the disadvantages that a founder that doesn't know the system, the culture, or the network, how does that harms them in terms of their startup becoming successful?
It's hugely harmful. And there's plenty of data to back it up, which is... You know, look at who gets funded by demographics, not by the quality of the business, but just look at how much less Latin and Black founders get than white founders and Asian founders. And so not all of it is about the businesses they start. Some of it is about the businesses they start because the white venture capitalists don't understand the opportunities. Right. That's the other piece. But there is absolutely biases built into the system. It's one of the reasons that K4 Capital, many years ago, we ended requiring a warm intro. We think that warm intros are inherently biased. And as you say, I mean, look, if somebody offers you a warm intro to a place you want to go, take it. But you shouldn't have to have a warm intro to be able to apply for a job. You shouldn't have to have a warm intro to be able to pitch a venture capital firm if you've got a great startup.
Yeah, it's a tough and terrible system, right? When it's like, yeah, I see it all the time. And please put me up against anyone you want in Sandy Hill Road or in California. And it's tough when you can see like what they have, and it's like a privileged founder does not really have the confidence.
Yep.
Does not really have the experience.
Yeah.
Does not know what I know, what I've been through, you know, and when they're starting. But a warm intro, a circle of warm intros gets you in, and now the system is forced to make you successful.
Uh-huh.
And to open the doors and despite that, they either inject so much money.
Yeah.
I have boards against me from other investors that I said no to come after my customers, right? When they invest in the competition. And so I've seen all kinds of real nasty stuff happen. And despite of that, right, it would be great if investors would try to do the work instead, right, and figure out who has the potential to be successful or what are the right businesses, instead of just being like, oh, you came from here, you did this.
Right.
Absolutely, we'll write you the check, right?
Yeah. And
it's silly. It's silly. There's no due diligence whatsoever.
That's right. That's right. It's just bias. But you're absolutely right that once you get in the door, there's a whole series of practices and forces that help you succeed.
Right. And what are the things you kind of have done when you have a portfolio that is diverse that, in my opinion, I mean, I'm Latina, right? And I say that, and I'm like, sometimes I look at it and I look at them and I'm like, oh, this company's Latino founded, Black founded. I'm like, geez, they don't know. They have so far to go to figure out go to market or who to hire or where to find these people, how to pitch this, how to get this level of customers, how to spend this money, how to manage, you know, like, I'm like, well, how do we teach them all those things? Like, how do we share that to get them to move faster?
Well, so a couple things. One is K4 Capital has always had a platform team to help its founders and has, you know, has helped founders with hiring. K4 Capital has always offered various kinds of experts and webinars and training for founders. On the K4 Center investment side, where we do the fund investing, we are very worried about all of the first-time fund managers of color that raised money post-George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Very worried that, you know, they set out to raise 50 million and they closed on 34.
Yeah, less. I have people raising 25 or 10 and raise 2. I mean,
you can't run a fund on that.
Nope.
So if you can't support your portfolio company, so we are fearing a huge number of portfolio companies from first-time founders of color going under, and then they will pull the funds who invested in them under. So rather than writing a follow-on check to each and every one of these funds, we've decided that the best and highest use of our time and money is to create a platform team across funds.
Wow.
So we are
helping. I want to be you. That's what I'm saying. These are the moves. These are the moves, Rita. Respect.
So we just brought a couple dozen of our GPs together for a convening. You know, sort of, how can you help each other? And how can we help you? So
you know why? Because it's I love that, because I see a lot of, you know what, Latinos, and sometimes I hear Blacks say it too, like, it says Latinos were like crabs in a bucket. Can you believe that we say about that each other, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and we're struggling, and we're like, and every time I try to connect into the community, I spoke at a Latino VC event in New York a few months back. Uh-huh. It's about 100 of them, right? So it's all you know, all the known suspects there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they asked me about diversity, and I blew up, and I said, you know what? Instead of asking me about diversity, let me tell you something. I'm trying to hire my first business hire at my company, Novi. Why don't you go ahead and send me the top people in Goldman Sachs? Everybody, I got the 100 GPs here, right? It's like, send me the people right now. I might have gotten 4 or 5 candidates, right? And out of those, it was a tough interview time, where I felt like I needed to coach this people and help them, because there's such a gap in how they present themselves and how much they and so, like, I was like, the solution, but the point of it is that we need to figure out how to help each other. But there you come again and doing just some crazy moves to say, how do we help those not fail? Because it's going to look really bad, right?
Right.
If this funds, that's going to swing the pendulum back again. And says,
exactly.
That's why you don't get money. I can see someone on Twitter going like, you don't know how to run a fund. You don't know how to do this. You know, it's like,
yeah. If we have a higher number of funds and companies with first-time entrepreneurs, first-time fund managers of color fail, you're absolutely right. It will be used as an excuse to not fund again.
Right, and so we see that in there. Yeah, this is awesome. Like I said, no, I really mean it. Like, you are leagues ahead, but it's inspiring, because we need to transfer this knowledge of what you're doing.
We do.
It needs to be documented, because you're on the other side, and we need to learn and educate ourselves how we're going to help each other when no one else is around to help us, right?
Right.
And we need to this kind of, yeah, this is, no, you're solid, And you're able to mix everything, right? Capitalism, activism, and fairness, right? Just do good things.
Just basic humanity.
Thank you, Frida, so much for coming on the show. It was, enlightening for me, inspirational.
My pleasure. And I look forward to many, many more conversations.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. And share the episode with your friends. Our work isn't done until everyone has equal access to their dreams.